Sweet. Thanks for coming on. So how you doing today?
Oh, you know, living this dream in the Midwest.
That's right. That's right. How long ago did you move there?
About 2.5 years. Yeah, 2.5 years.
Yeah, it's fresh. It's fresh. Where were you before, though?
Metro New York City, Westchester County.
I was going to say, you were in New York, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So for like the lifelong New Yorker, this is a whole new world, right? Like in the craziest way possible. So it's been quite the journey, but we are thankfully going to be headed home at some point soon. So we're excited.
Really? How soon are we talking?
Aiming for the next 6 months. It was a secret, but I guess it's not a secret anymore. So there you go.
Oh.
The announcement. The announcement has been made. Yeah. So my husband was president of the South Dakota Dental Association when we met. And so he obviously couldn't leave. And so I came over, but obviously that has since ended. And so, yeah, it's time to go home, I think.
Great. Do you think he's going to come with you over there?
He is.
Over here, I guess, since I'm in New York.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was always part of the plan. I mean, I was never going to be here forever. And he's very excited about the next adventure. So we're good.
It's gotta be hot over there, right? Completely different weather, climate.
Yeah, I mean, it is like -30 Fahrenheit in the winter, which I had never felt before in my life. So when my husband walks the puppy, he has to put like ski goggles on because it hurts your face. And they plow the snow, Brendan, in mounds. It's like mountains. And then they take it and cart it and dump it into like the rivers and lakes.
So your dog's still alive after -30.
Yes. Yes. Thankfully there's indoor places to walk her, but you know, if she needs to go out sometimes, he like suits up in his ski gear. So it's no joke here. It's no joke here.
I'm getting cold just thinking about it. I think I would want to put the goggles on the indoor walk.
Yep. And then, you know, it gets very warm and this is largely farmland. So the other fun benefit of being here is that if you have allergies to anything like grass or pollen or trees, they go into overdrive because when they like plow the fields, everything gets kicked up.
Oh no. Do you have allergies to?
Terrible ones. And I got here and I was like, why do I feel like I'm spinning? Why do I feel like crap? And then you look outside and you can see like the haze. You can see the haze. So,
do you guys get like cars covered in yellow, like the pollen on the windows and stuff?
You do. And the other thing that you get here that you don't get at home is, so the Canadian wildfires are a big thing and you can smell the smoke. It smells like there's bonfires outside and it's the wildfires in Canada.
Oh man, we had that one time. This was like 3 years ago, I think, in the summer in New York, but I haven't seen anything since then. So you're getting that like pretty frequently, huh?
Yeah. And like, you'll look outside and like they like the sun will be red and it's because of all the wildfires.
That's not good. And that's not good for your lungs either.
No, the air quality is garbage. Sometimes it feels like I'm in India. Like you look at the AQI and it's terrible. I know. I was like, okay, so for all these different reasons, we need to go home. We need to go home.
And he's on board. So that's, everything's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was never going to be here forever. And so he knew that at some point, you know, you can take the girl out of New York, but not for that.
Not the New York out of the girl, right?
No, no. That's why the dog's name is Yankee. So
your post today in the story of the Yankees. Yeah. Cool. Cool. Did you end up cooking today? You said that because
Of course. I did. I make our meals every day because the other thing about being somewhere like this is the diet is primarily red meat. And I'm a practicing Hindu. I don't eat red meat.
What do you do?
So you watch TikTok and learn to cook.
True. A lot of, what's your like top three things to cook then? If like,
let's see, salmon, turkey meatballs, and tacos, chicken tacos, turkey tacos, those kinds of things.
So you have plenty of fun. Tacos are the best. Every Tuesday, Taco Tuesday.
Yeah. Except it's like Taco Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, sometimes Sunday. I mean, I never listen at home, right? You know, everything is so accessible. You don't even think.
Yeah.
There's no Apple store in the whole state. If you want a formal outfit for something, I mean, there's a couple places you might be able to get one, but not really. Like you have to really plan. So it wasn't just getting used to the food. It was also just like life coming from somewhere where everything is so accessible.
You are out there in the middle of nowhere.
Well, and the thing is that so many people I see talking about going rural, and okay, Sioux Falls is 200,000-ish people. So to me, it's rural. To most people, it wouldn't be, but even still, no Apple store. You know, the food is a challenge. My husband has a Tesla. There's one charger, I think, in the whole city. He had to put a charger in at his office, and there's no dealership in the whole state. So if you're Tesla, if something happens, it has to get flatbedded to a different state.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we
like
to get you back to civilization.
Yeah, yeah. We're on our way.
Then is he, where is he from? Is he from
He's from here. He's a townie. He went to dental school in Nebraska. We're going to his 25-year dental school reunion next weekend. So my husband went into practice with his like childhood dentist that he then shadowed. And so he's been at the same place his entire career.
That's a dream. But then he's going to have to.
Well, so his senior partner retired. So now my husband is the senior partner. But I mean, that was always the plan. He was not going to be in South Dakota forever.
Right, right, right. It's going to be a shell shock for him then, though, coming to New York.
Well, you know what the good thing is that he already has a friends group there because my friends that we stay in very close touch with are his friends. Hmm. I have family there. He goes skiing in Switzerland with one of my cousins every year. I mean, he's got it. Like, he's got a friends group there. Yeah. So for him, he's like, oh, this is great. I'm just that much closer to being able to, like, you know, go to Europe. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's one way of looking at it. So he's
super excited. It's a couple hours closer. What part of New York are you looking at? Same place?
Westchester. Yeah, we're going to go back to Westchester because that's where our practices are. But yeah, I just, that whole lifestyle piece is something that I think no one really talks about. And then depending on what you're used to, I mean, you might also lose your whole sense of community. There's one Indian temple in the whole area and they practice our religion in a different way than I do. And so if that's something that's important to you, you might not realize that you're going somewhere that you're going to lose your sense of community too.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Yeah. Because different, what do they call it? Dialects of certain, you know, religions, it could be different. From state to state.
Yeah. And, you know, even, I mean, there's so many different kinds of Christianity, right? Like Judaism, are you Orthodox? Are you Reform? At home, there's somewhere to worship for everyone, but it's not the case everywhere.
Right. That's crazy. You know, and there's such a push for, you know, serving underserved areas, underrepresented areas. And it is so important, I think, but that's such an important point, you know, because when you finally do go out into that area to do the right thing, the culture shock, the shell shock, the loss of your friend group, your family, that can be somehow we have to empower people of those groups in those areas to become professionals for their areas and then go back to those areas. I think in the it's an idea I've been thinking about for a while. I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, there's no dental school in the state. And so most of the people that are here are coming back home. Very few of them are coming to South Dakota for other reasons. I mean, maybe they have a partner that's from here or like a spouse or something, but other than that, everyone's from here and they're all coming home.
Right. Exactly. So we need to select people from certain underrepresented, underserved areas, and then they're going to have, you know, it in them to go back, you know?
Yeah. And not go to Mexico.
Just go.
No.
Actually, it's funny that we're talking because that's where I'm in now. I'm in Smithtown. I grew up, I'm literally in the house I grew up in. And the goal is to, you know, turn over ownership from my parents to my dad to me. And then just kind of build it up in the area. It's too bad I wasn't born in Sioux Falls because I would have gone back there.
Yeah. Well, and I got to tell you, there's only like two or three oral surgery groups in the whole state and there's 900,000 people. So the oral surgeons here have, obviously there's such opportunity and they are just class acts. The surgeons here are amazing. They're all great. Yeah.
They really do well. They must have a really good lifestyle. They could probably work like 3 days a week and just probably make triple my salary. Over here in New York.
One who is in Sioux Falls literally built a castle on the outskirts. I will send you a photograph.
Please.
A castle.
I want a castle. Are you going to get a castle in Westchester?
I mean, I think the castle in Sioux Falls is probably a lot more affordable than the castle in Westchester.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's land to build a castle in Westchester. There might be a wedding venue called the Castle, and it might be owned by the Rockefellers. So that's the closest comparison.
Then they have the that might be the one I'm thinking of, the one on the Hudson, right?
Yep. I think it's in like Tarrytown somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, Tarrytown. Yeah. What part of Westchester? I have like my future brother-in-law, sister-in-law. They live in Fleetwood.
Okay.
And he's from Westchester. Is that, I don't know if that's close to you at all.
So I grew up in Chappaqua, so it's kind of northern Westchester County. Fleetwood is southern, but it's not that big. Like Westchester's not that big, so it's not that far away.
Yeah. So let's hit on some topics. What's changed? What's new? I mean, obviously, we talked. This is like four years ago now, but we had you on the podcast a long time. That was part one, so this will be part two. What's changed since then? Besides moving, how are you practicing right now?
I am practicing right now. Kind of aside from that, I do a lot of traveling and educating all around the country, which has been a really, really great opportunity and has sort of allowed me to take everything I learned as a private practice owner, as a, you know, someone that was involved in organized dentistry and leadership, the lessons that I learned from my father, right, who was my boss in New York, and channel that into what information and data can I provide to new practice owners, new dentists, new graduates that, like, I wish I had learned, or that maybe they'd have to pay a lot of money to get somewhere else. And so I'm really thankful that I have this platform nationally now to be able to do that. So I think that's probably the biggest change. But really the other is, because the last time we talked, I believe it was right pre-pandemic or right in the middle of it.
It was right around there,
right around there. And, you know, just the whole climate shift, and not just our world, but also the landscape of dentistry has just completely changed so much. And for 3 years, we were all sitting behind a screen, right? So information that we would have to sort of crowdsource maybe in person was now being handed to us in ways that we could digest it left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And I really think that that availability, obviously it's a good thing, but has also drastically shifted kind of the way that we look at everything, the way we consume everything.
That's a great point. That's a great point. How are you implementing this into your platform, your discussions and your travels where you're educating, mentoring, speaking?
Yeah.
What are kind of the main topics you'd like to go towards?
Yep. So I largely talk about patient communication, dental benefits, and sort of demystifying the mystery behind them, making that work, conflict resolution, time management, things that I think are so important that obviously dental school residency doesn't have the time to teach you, right? And then you get thrown into the mix of it no matter where you practice. And it can feel very overwhelming, right? Almost as overwhelming as, oh my gosh, my first impacted wisdom tooth extraction in real life, or my first crown prep, right? That sense of like, oh my gosh, what do I do?
Yeah.
But, you know, just in terms of how that's all been integrated into what I do. But the thing that I like to caution people about is to not believe everything you read and see, right? We have the data. The ADA has something called the Health Policy Institute, and they collect data, they analyze data behind really the pulse of dentistry in the country. So we know what the average salaries are, right? We know where there's workforce attrition. We know all these things. And one of the big challenges, I think, Brendan, is this imposter syndrome and also this sense of like, I'm not good enough. But now I can actively in real time compare myself to the, you know, 50,000 people I follow or whatever it is. And they're doing this and they're doing that. And I'm not. And oh my gosh, I'm not good enough. Whereas I think that that divide was a lot harder to breach before, because it was harder to sort of know what everyone was doing. But now it's just commonplace, right? Everyone knows what everyone's doing.
Instantly at our fingertips. So you're constantly in the comparison, the compare game. And what is it? Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep.
So is that this like it's definitely not better than it's good to be self-aware. It's good to develop emotional intelligence from that regard and that aspect, right? But it's also really important to say that has nothing to do with your day to day, like not a thing.
Right.
So,
right. It's that let them theory, right? Which initially I was like, what does that even mean? And then you start to process it and it's like, listen, like you said, it doesn't impact your life, right? What this person does doesn't impact what this person does. And it's great if you can learn and it's great if you can take something positive from it, but it shouldn't cause you to feel less than. And that is a lot of what I see all around the country, all around.
I've been seeing it too. A lot of the students I've been talking to, a lot of the residents I've been talking to, just a couple of weeks ago, I had a resident reach out saying how he's got no one, he or she has no one to talk to in their program. You know, is feeling super swamped and they're like a 3 out of 6 or something. And it's like it, and I, you know, we all feel there time and time again. You feel it in undergrad, you feel it in dental school, you feel it in residency. And, but the scary part to me was that, cause we're constantly getting bombarded by all this information, all these comparisons, but to not have someone to kind of talk to that's in the same boat. And I know where he's coming from, right? Cause an oral surgery residency is so small, you might not click with everyone. You might not vibe with everyone. You might not be able to have that leveled conversation with another person. I don't know. What do you think about all that?
I think that if anything, we have realized the power of human contact, right? We are in a contact profession. And so when we lost that, and now we are able to, you know, Zoom or Teams or do so much virtually and remotely, and you kind of also, concurrently, the more training you do, the more siloed you get, right? So if you are feeling that way in real life, in your program or in your practice or, you know, in your associateship, but then you're also feeling that way because you're just disconnected. You know, I think it's a really big challenge, which is why so much of what I do is not clinical. You know, there's really great clinical education out there. There's really great clinical CE out there. And I decided to take what I had learned and turn it into, hey, listen, this might seem insurmountable, and it did for me, and this is what worked. And making it real in a way to where I've been able to get up on stage now and say, you know what, if you knew me, or if you look at my social media from 7 or 8 or 10 years ago, you might think this is a girl that, you know, was traveling the world and had it all together and was doing all these things and was so involved and was giving back to her profession. And I was miserable, Brendan. I was miserable. And you'd have never known it. And I use that as an example. Like, you just don't know people's struggles. So take the information that I've gained from my struggles. Hopefully it helps you. But the best reward would be if you would do the same thing for someone else.
Yeah. Let me, I got 2 follow-up questions to that. How about now? How do you feel now?
At peace.
And what was a big driver in that? Or a couple of big drivers? You know what I mean? Because now you're out, you left Westchester, you left your home, you're out of the shell.
Yep, out of the shell. You know, I think, no, not easy. And listen, I want to go home, right? This is obviously not home for me. So that part aside, I think what I realized is that I was looking for validation, attention, love, all of those things externally, when really it all comes from within, right? If you don't like yourself, or you don't feel like you can sit with yourself and your thoughts, you're never going to get it from anywhere else. And you're probably going to go looking for it in the wrong places.
Yeah.
And the big thing that changed for me, and I'll tell you, you know, so many people, like, you know, we're looking for our partner, we're looking for, you know, our right romantic partner, we're looking for our right practice, we're looking. And I think that when you really sit with your thoughts and figure out what your goals in life are for yourself and where you want to be, and sort of reverse engineer that a little bit, you get a lot of clarity. And personally for me, it was, where do I want my personal life to be, rather? Because I had my professional life where I wanted it. And I said, you know, what do I want from a partner, Brendan? What do I want? And I remember when I met my now husband, I said, you know, it's lonely at the top of the mountain. And what does that mean, right? So every top of the mountain moment doesn't have to be huge and momentous. But when you have one of those, whether it's like, you know, you did a successful case, or you made a patient really happy, or whatever, and then you turn around and you wish that you could share that joy, and you can share it with friends, but you're not able to, it gets lonely. And so then I think that loneliness triggers the, oh my gosh, I have to find that somewhere. And then you go looking for it in the wrong places. And so I would say that this peace, the greatest sense of peace, came from that.
Finding solace inside that. I think that's a really important factor that you mentioned. It ultimately comes down to self-awareness, right? Recognizing careers where it's at, but why am I still pressured or stressed or... Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then you looked at it, you took a step back, and it came down to some of the personal life on the side. That's a really good point. And I can't, something I noticed throughout dental school, throughout residency, is some people, their significant other isn't as supportive as they need them to be in that moment, at that time. They need to be understanding, and that might be a conversation for another time, but you need to find that in someone, especially in these hard times in your life. But that ultimately comes down to self-awareness. If you're not willing to look and dive in deeper to your self-awareness, you're never going to recognize that. And where do you end up?
Right.
Imposter syndrome.
Yep, exactly. So it's all this kind of interconnected cycle that I think, listen, it's scary to sit there, right, with your own thoughts in silence. It's scary to think, where do I want my life to go? And what do I have to do to get there? That's hard work. And that's not easy. Change is hard. Change is scary. But it's necessary.
Absolutely. And think about it. We're constantly studying for something on this trajectory, this route. I mean, you open your eyes and you're late 20s, early 30s or later, and you just start working.
Yep.
What do you do now? You're never sitting down. You have your own thoughts, but there's always a book in front of you. There's always you always have to study for something else. There's another exam. There's another application to put in. So yeah, I mean, in a way, sometimes, and I do feel this, I don't know if you noticed that in dental school, especially, I think some people are, like, the emotional intelligence, the self-awareness, there's certain things that are too immature, and it comes out in like my grade was better than your grade kind of thing. Like, you got a 91, I got a 95, I'm better. Like, what?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I saw a lot of that in dental school. I think it's you don't sit with yourself enough. It's constant books, studying, tests, grades. And then you just open your eyes and it's like, wait, life is so much more different. And, you know, real life is different than
Yeah. Yeah, that comes at you real fast.
So you mentioned with COVID and everything, that was the last time we talked. It was like 2020, 2021 when we were talking about it, and you were saying that things have switched so fast. I thought, why don't we take a stride, if we can, try towards this topic. What are some of the most focused things or aspects of these changes that have been happening? Some of the things you're more passionate about, if there's anything on the tip of your tongue that you want to go into, or I can lead the way here. I got some thoughts.
Yeah, I would say that the most important thing is thinking for yourself, right? And not getting carried away by this tide of everyone is thinking or everyone is doing, so I have to or I must. And that sense of individuality and making your own decisions for yourself and not feeling pressured or not feeling like because you made this choice, you're wrong because someone else has chosen to do it another way. I think that that's a big one.
I like that a lot. Are you referring to practices morphing?
I'm referring to all of it. Listen, there is space in dentistry for group practices, solo practices, large practices like DSOs or DPOs. There is room for academics, researchers, military dentistry. It's one of the best parts of our profession, right?
Right.
And dentistry still manages to be the best small business in healthcare out there. That's what I believe. But, listen, just because you decide to choose one path and you make that decision because everyone else is doing something else or everyone, allegedly is doing something else, doesn't make your decision any less, right? Because what you definitely don't want to do, and I always say that dentists have this great ability to miss the forest for the trees. We're all really myopic, right? I mean, our world is about this big, and if you or someone like my father, the endodontist, it's like in millimeters or tenths of millimeters, right? So it's really easy to just get on that hamster wheel and go, 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 and like you said, turn around and you're 40, you're 50, you're 60. And I see it all the time because it's not surprisingly just the new practice owners and the new dentists that are coming to my lectures. A lot of people are seasoned dentists. And it was surprising to me because in my head, I was like, well, you must have learned this or you must already know this. And it's just not something that's ever been talked about or validated.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of the trends. What's a DPO? That was one thing that you mentioned.
A
I
dental
never.
partnership organization, they're similar to DSOs, but I believe that the difference is that like the dentist still owns more, some sort of differentiation like that. So it's not really as centralized as a DSO would be. But there's all of these springing up left and right. There's small DSOs, right? So they own 5 or 10 or 15 offices, and from the outside, you'd never know that it was a DSO. There's just so much of all of that in dentistry, but there is room for everyone. There is room for everyone.
Unmarked offices. Yeah, I've seen a lot of those too. That's an interesting one. DPO, so not private equity backed, solely owned by the partners or
Right, exactly.
clients, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of them are a
I like
mix, but
that
most of
idea.
them are owned by the partners. Yeah. I mean, I think you can set up a group practice similar to that, where you have your associates buy in, right? And then you together decide to expand, maybe. I have friends that have done things similar to that. But I would say, like I said, that sense of individuality is what kind of got lost. And people sometimes fear that, and I don't think it should be feared.
It shouldn't be, but I think it is being feared, and it's becoming harder and harder in all of healthcare with the consolidation going on to kind of be a solo practice owner and stay to keep the doors open, really, and everyone thinks it's like competition. There's so many dentists being put out, and there are, and there is competition, especially in New York. But I think the squeeze is really from the financial side. People don't have that extra money to spend on things unless their iPhone falls in the toilet, then they'll get that. But
Then of course.
other than that, of course, right? The next day you'll get one. But other than that, people don't really have the money to spend on things, which is interesting because the market's at a high, right? But, and then they don't have it, so they get this insurance and they invest in it every year. But the money that the insurance is paying for these procedures are going further and further down every year until you get a big enough group that can use all of the patients. Like they need hundreds of thousands of patients to kind of leverage against that insurance company and say, hey, we're going to need to increase these crowns. It was Dr. Louis Chen who was talking about this. Go from $750 to $1,250 a crown. But if you only own one or two offices, you don't have that kind of leverage. So it's becoming what is that? It's almost like antitrust or like it's a monopoly, but it's not like an organic monopoly. It's kind of like holding it over your head because you haven't conformed to the consolidation period.
Yeah, and to that, I would say a couple things. First of all, more dentists than not don't read their contracts. And like, fair, because the contracts are sometimes this big and the fees are at the end, right? And it's language that we don't understand. I don't understand. So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is that you have to sort of look at what patients are being told about insurance. And I talk about this in one of my lectures a lot. So obviously dental insurance was created in the 1970s, right? As an incentive for large corporations to hire workers.
Mm-hmm.
Average annual maximums back then, 1,000 to 1,500. We know nothing has changed. So, you know, you walk in and you're going to be in. Yep.
That's what patients don't understand. They need to know.
No, you're fine. So, you know, you walk in, you're going to work at IBM and you go through your orientation and part of your orientation is HR, right? So you go in and this is how you sign up for your 401k and these are your options for medical, dental, and vision. And the way it's presented to you is this is what takes the least out of your paycheck and this is what takes the most out of your paycheck.
Mm.
This is, you know, oh, you didn't wear your retainer when you were younger and you want braces now? Well, this one has adult orthodontic coverage. But they're not told that adult could mean 18, it could mean 21, or it could mean 26. They're told that at all. HR is not telling them, or the broker that they buy it from. So then they come to you, and they have picked the plan that is taking a significant chunk, you know, in their opinion, out of their paycheck, and it's got an adult orthodontic benefit that cut off at 26, right? And no one ever told them that. So who becomes the bad guy now? You.
The dentist. Right? Dentist always the bad guy.
Of course. And so much of this is about that education. And to my patients' face at this point, I tell them that their dental insurance is a coupon from the 1970s. And that starts the conversation because then they're like, what are you talking about? And when I explain that, most of the time they will stop me and say, whoa, wait a second. HR didn't tell us this because that's what they're being told and shown. And if you go onto the website for some of these better known insurance companies that will remain unnamed, you can see for yourself, like you put in a procedure code and it'll say, if you don't get this insurance, you save zero. If you sign up with the PPO version, you save $100. If you sign up with the Premier version, you save $50. They are presenting it as a savings to the patient. Devaluing
it's
what we
very,
do.
Very, very, what's the word? It's very manipulative.
Yeah. It's like psychologically manipulative. Yes.
Extremely deceiving. Had a conversation just to throw it into the mix. I had a conversation. It's probably not good to name insurance companies, right? Although like if you don't name them, then no one ever knows. I don't know. Well, anyway, I was talking with a patient today and he came in. Oh, okay. Yeah. You want to have their tooth removed? We put in the implant. Sure. Okay. What insurance do you have? How much is the coverage going to be? And I was like, okay, just keep in mind, you know, most of these insurance companies, they aren't covering anything. Or if they do, it's like based on your annual maximum, or they cover that one per 12 months. And then I took it to office manager and it was one of those plans where, and I had to explain this because so he's told, no, you do have full coverage for one implant a year. And then okay. I had to have the conversation. Okay. Full coverage isn't the fee that it costs us to put the implant in, right? To get the implant, for me to put it in, the time it takes to do it. Full coverage is just whatever they decide they want to pay us. So if an implant costs us $2,000 to put in, some insurances pay us $1,800. That's what the minimum we could do it for. But your insurance is paying $1,000. We can't do that. We can't afford to do it for those fees. And he said, oh, but I was told I have full coverage. That's what the full coverage is. That's the discount from the 1970s that you're talking about. That's exactly what it is. That's 50% of what it costs us to put it in. And it's even worse for some teeth. Some of these teeth, you know, like it's a surgical extraction, 7210, and our fee is $500 for that. But this insurance company is paying $52.50. So we're literally a tenth. And some of these teeth, you know, like root canal treated like 10 times. She's 95 years old. And it takes a while to get out, you know? You're looking up in the sinus. But it's, God, it's so interesting. And these patients are being so deceived by language. Oh, and then we really broke it down and it came down to you only get that implant that's reimbursed for $1,000 if you have seizures or you didn't have a tooth there when you were born. So tooth agenesis or seizures. By the way, call him Robert. Robert, do you have seizures?
Are you sure? Yeah.
Sure.
You sure? You might.
But anyway, it's...
You know, it is definitely... And this is where that patient communication piece comes into play, right? And you said it, but so many people aren't saying it. One of the things that we talk a lot about is patient education. But then there's a squeeze from the other side, right? How do you properly educate your patients when you've got a number to make, chairs that are waiting for you, right? Patients that are waiting for you, or hygienists that are waiting for you. How do you do that? It's right? It's overwhelming. And I think that most people don't understand that patients are not mad at us. We're just the easiest people to blame because we're the ones that end up telling them the truth. No one's told them the truth before, like your guy with the seizures or the missing tooth. right? Or the other one that I see all the time is a waiting period, right? So a patient gets a job and they sign up with whatever insurance, and now they're finally ready to do that implant, or they're finally ready to do that bridge. And they come in to see you, and the insurance gets verified, and they have a 12-month waiting period for any major procedures.
Man,
mm-hmm.
That one I haven't encountered yet. 12-month waiting period. So,
yeah. I mean, and it can be, yeah. Nothing major. I mean, they can have their cleanings and their exams, but you know, there's a waiting period. And on the other side of that, as a practice, if you aren't watching that stuff like a hawk, if you don't have a very solid terminal taking care of all that, you're gonna do a lot of free work because they will never pay it.
Right. And they're not going to. And then they find out that their credit score doesn't change if they don't pay even hospital bills. It's
right. Because now that's not... changed.
And in one way, I get it. It's like, you're not going to afford a $25,000 bill tomorrow, you know?
No. And look, dentistry is expensive. And most people don't have $2,000 in their checking account, right? Let alone $25,000. What we do is expensive. And what do patients think, right? We come to you and you're expensive and you hurt me. So it's like, you've already got all these strikes against you. But that, like you said, that squeeze of, well, we got to educate our patients, but this is what they're being told on the other end. But hey, we've also got to actually feed ourselves, right? And take care of our staff.
Got to keep the lights on. Got to feed the staff. Yeah, we're not all driving like Lamborghinis to work. It's not 1970 anymore when they did. So it's very, very important. And I find that dental students don't understand these things either at all.
Correct.
And that's something I appreciate that you're getting out there and educating. I'm trying to talk to everyone about this as well, wherever we can, but you know.
Yeah. And it's because I think they, more than anyone else in our profession, like you said, right, you're constantly studying, but you've got your book here and your computer here. So what are you doing, right? You're looking and you're seeing, well, oh my gosh, look at what this person's doing and look at what they did. And why can't I do this? And why am I not doing better, right? And it's most of it's not true. Most of it's not true. It's not.
It's not. And what is true might be outdated. So that fee, like Medicaid B, this study came out, I think it was 6 months ago by Omsnick. Medicaid B fees, the reimbursements, have decreased 33% since 2001.
I believe it.
This is a really bad trend. They've gone down. Inflation, as we know, has only gone up. And I thought, because you know better than anyone else, the whole point of the insurance was to allow a broader group, you know, to help companies hire people, but get a broader group of people the healthcare they need in a more affordable way. The doctors, dentists, everyone gets paid. Patients get the care they need, and it kind of goes into a pot. The pot gets spread out and reimbursed by across, and that stopped being reimbursed. So it goes into the pot, but nothing comes out. And they're just decreasing the fees more and more every year. Where are we going to be in 50 years from now? Say 25 years. That's another 33% that we're going to go down. It might be worse with AI.
It might be worse, but you know, I think you're going to see a lot more practices trending towards fee-for-service. You have to.
You have to. There's no other way.
But here's the other thing, right? The counterpoint to that is this. So let's say you see a patient once every year, okay? And we're talking about a general dental office. And they come in for their two cleanings, radiographs, exams, all that stuff. And you do a filling on them a year or two fillings. Hey, maybe you even take a tooth out, right? You're not doing extensive restorative work or extensive surgical work. I talked to some of these patients and I asked them to show me, people that I trusted, what was being taken out of their paycheck. And sometimes they have more taken out of their paycheck than they would have spent at your office if you offered them a membership plan. And so I think that that's a really important data point as a counter to that. And again, this is all patient education, but I think that one of the things that fee-for-service practices that are doing very well, aside from having good patient relationships, is having very robust membership plans to offer. And membership plans can exist at specialty practices too, because it can entitle you to however many x-rays, exams, and cleanings a year, but also a certain percentage off your usual fee, whatever that is, which is still puts you ahead than if you were in network with whatever insurance taking a, what was it, 50, 60% haircut.
I think that's a great idea. These membership plans, one of my dreams, when you can, we got to connect with someone or a team or something, because I would like to start kind of like a membership plan, but for, you know how Delta Dental, right? It was created by dentists in the 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. I would like to kind of revitalize the importance of that and really the spirit in that. I want all dentists to come together. I want to use AI to eliminate 90% of the administrative costs that most insurance companies have now, because we can do that. Mm-hmm. I want to use zip codes to create like a reimbursement plan for dentists based around the mean or median or average salaries in the area. So like the cost of living, the average household incomes. And I think it'll solve a lot of problems here.
Yeah.
We create a board of dentists that approve, like we come up with reimbursement fees. We come up with the costs for the insurance plan. And then we moderate it every year. And we mm-hmm. all vow to never take a salary being on the board because all that money should go back in. We're dentists. We work. Mm-hmm. We make yep. a living. We yep. shouldn't need a salary as it's something I really like to work. I think it would solve some of the underserved areas too. Because if you have a certain pot of money going into like two or three zip codes and other zip codes only one, the more dentists you put in the one, it's going to minimize how much all the dentists get reimbursed for certain things.
Correct.
Versus going out in the middle of Sioux Falls, right?
Yep.
X number of, say, endodontists,
mm-hmm.
more money going into those few endodontists. So it incentivizes it much more when it spreads that and creates a self-sustainable mm-hmm. model that doesn't rely on the government to keep putting money into the pot. It's anyway, and we could use AI to kind of minimize a lot of the overhead costs with that. It's something that over the next 20 years, I just want to throw it out there really quickly before our chat's over.
Yeah, no. And I think that you highlighted the most important part, that most of this money is going towards administrative costs and salaries. I mean, you should, if anyone that's watching hasn't done it yet, go to Nonprofit Explorer and look up some of the salaries of these insurance companies because they're all nonprofits.
Nonprofits.
Yeah.
Nonprofits.
So their salaries are all public and you should see what some of them are.
Yeah. 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 And all the nonprofit, what is that? Margins goes
yep.
into politics, goes into the media, goes into advertisements. It's not into the patients that pay for all of it.
No, now I see insurance companies sponsoring what? Like sports arenas and sports games and okay. I mean,
Northwell Hospital sponsoring the Mets games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have the most beautiful, the kids thing on the side. And it's beautiful, but.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now we have dental insurance and DSOs yep. opening dental schools. How many? Seven in the last 5 years or five in the last 7 years? It's like.
Yeah. Something like that. There's a bunch.
But there's a contracture. There's a consolidation in the field at large, in all fields. So here's something. Mm-hmm. I have the Instagram account Top Winers. I've been running mm-hmm. it since 2017, 2018, whatever it is. I talked to some winery owners throughout the United States, and there's a lot of buying up by bigger wineries, bigger winery organizations, mm-hmm. the family-owned wineries. Everyone loves it. They're keeping the name, but it's being bought by these bigger conglomerates. We see it in breweries. Blue Point Brewery out here on Long Island, it's like 5 years ago or so, was bought by Budweiser. And I think it's sold since then. But healthcare, all the hospitals are buying up all mm-hmm. the little outpatient clinics and everything. And we're seeing it in dentistry too. So here's my question. If everything's kind of consolidating, right? They buy on mm-hmm. all these offices and they fill the spots, but people, it doesn't make more jobs necessarily. More administrative jobs, but the stats show that doctor jobs don't increase as much but we're increasing the amount of dental students by the hundreds every year
mm-hmm.
going out into the United States. This obviously the math doesn't add up here.
No.
What have you seen as far as your experiences, what you've seen, what you've observed over the years, as well as where do you think it's going and how does this kind of fizzle out?
I mean, I think, listen, there were dental schools that closed, weren't there? Farley Dickinson, Emory, Northwestern, they all had dental schools
Georgetown.
That closed. Georgetown. Yep.
But that was the 90s, right? 90s, 2000s, they closed down?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I can't imagine that all of these schools are going to stay open, right? And then also the astronomical cost of the education was the other part of this.
Because it's not going to work as well now if they cap certain things.
Correct.
So the money going into these schools, High Point University down in the Carolinas, opened by the DSO, because that's the thing. They could just increase the tuition every year. The incentive
yep.
over the last 20 years, since those like Georgetown closed,
yep.
Fairleigh Dickinson, the incentive then was like, we got to get these students into the clinic and start working. The making money off of,
right.
you know, seeing patients, which was training for dental students. But now they haven't increased clinic sizes, but they've increased class
yep.
sizes. So they're
yep.
making more money off the tuition from students. And that
Correct.
Goes up astronomically every year. But here's the thing. It's such an interesting conversation and we don't have to get too far into it, but we get to that cusp of are professional students going to be able to afford to go to school, right? That whole cap loan thing, $200,000. Mm-hmm. But then how do we stop these schools from just, they're not putting money into the education and training
right. Right.
of future dentists in the nation, they're just making money off of adding more students to classes, more didactics, mm-hmm. less clinic. I don't know. It's an interesting crossroads of history.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, something's got to give.
That's something's got to give. And someone's always a bad guy. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. These schools won't be able to all stay open. They're going to have to find a way. Private loans, I guess. Huh. Isn't that a conflict of interest? What is it? UIC that has Delta Dental on the wall in the beginning?
Tennessee does too, I think.
Tennessee does too. The orange. That's right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Tennessee does too. There's a couple. I think Oklahoma does too. Yep. There's a couple. I mean, and then they just bought a whole chain of dental practices in Wisconsin.
They bought the chain of dental practices?
Yeah. Delta Dental bought DSO in Wisconsin. It's a huge.
How is that allowed?
Well, the Wisconsin Dental Association and, you know, the ADA are trying to sort of say, hey, this is obviously a conflict of interest. But again, I don't know. We don't have their dollars and cents.
Textbook to fight it. Conflict of interest.
Correct.
What is it? Swenger and Passeri? There was some big lawsuit against it and it ended up just being like a kind of thing. And then it put so many radiologist jobs out, gone.
Yep.
But learning from that, did that make radiology better? Did that make patient care better? Did that make, you know, the profession better for radiologists?
I don't know.
COVID did, because a lot of them went remote and it gave them a little bit better quality of life. But as dentists, we're never going to be able to go to remote.
No, that's the unique thing about our profession. Right? Like,
yeah, it's a beautiful thing. So who would, I'm curious, because back in the day, it was like every dental practice had to have a dentist at the top. It needed to be owned by, and obviously that's not true anymore.
Right.
But like, who kind of reinforces that rule?
I mean, I guess the state boards, because there's some states where you don't have to be a dentist to own a dental practice, but I imagine that's part of the Dental Practice Act, I believe. And so it would come down to the state boards enforcing it.
So the state boards need to.
There's creative ways, right? I mean, a dentist could be a 51% owner. So then technically they're majority owner, right? So there are ways to sort of circumvent that. But I believe all of that is contained within the Dental Practice Act, and it's the state boards that regulate it. Yeah, so that's where that would go.
I don't know. Where's it?
So much. There's so many layers to all of this, right? Like, you start from the pandemic and the dental students, and then you start talking about different kinds of practice, and then you start talking about imposter syndrome, and now you get to this. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion.
We are. We're getting deep to the core of that onion. It's interesting. So my story was I met a bunch of dentists at the gym. I was thinking pre-med. I was thinking PA, medical school. I met a bunch of dentists at the gym and they were awesome. Such mentors. They were happy. They were like excited to go into work every day. And when I was about to start studying for the MCAT, they're like, good, do it. But just curious, you want to come in and see what we do for a living? See what, come into the practice and everything. And I was like, hey, yeah, sure. Thanks. Awesome. So I did. We did. And I shadowed them all and got to see what they did. And it was awesome. And I went into dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
And while in dental school, all three of them sold their practices to DSOs. And then I started to see, so they were always very diplomatic, very professional, but I kept in touch with like people that, because I worked in one of the practices where I kept in touch, and the dynamics, the culture, the inner vibes changed a little bit, I heard, and some outside things. It just changed, right? And then that dream became like it didn't seem to be there anymore. You know, it's like, now you're gonna have to go build it. It's not gonna be there arriving for you. And sure, you can't expect things to be waiting for you, right? We're not entitled for that type of expectation, but it's I think this is a common story to a lot of people, and it has been to a lot of people I met. I don't know.
Well, and it's so much that this comes back to exactly what we sort of started with talking about, is that everyone's path is their own, right? And if you must change and grow and evolve, right? That's just what's going to happen. And along the way, things that work are going to perpetuate, and things that don't work are going to sort of be selected out for. Not every DSO is doing, you know, going gangbusters. There are ones that have closed, we know, smaller ones. You know, obviously there's some DSOs that are just hoping for a buyout by a larger DSO, kind of like your winery analogy, or your winery story rather. And so, you know, it's hard. And I think the point that you made about culture, so much of that culture comes from the captain of the ship, which in our profession traditionally is the dentist. Right. But when that captain of the ship is now not the captain anymore, right, or is sharing his or her seat with someone, by default, the dynamics are going to change, right? The staff is the team. Who do we report to, right? Well, how are things going to be? Are the metrics going to be the same? You know, and that's why I told you dentistry, I think, is still one of the best small businesses out there. run as a small business, I think has amazing potential. But now we're being squeezed every single way. And I think, unfortunately, it's the next generation, the current generation of doctors that's feeling it the hardest. And so when I hear someone that graduated, even when my husband did in the year 2000, I mean, listen, I think he came out $80,000 in debt, right? Like maybe 90, I mean, right? So, and he went to school in Nebraska, but he was from South Dakota. And so those stories aren't real. They're not real for most people anymore. So it's a completely different climate.
Completely different. Yeah. And it's hard. It's kind of hard to connect with someone from the past being in our shoes and for someone in not even the past, but like in someone in a different era.
Yeah.
Just 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Different from the shoes of today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you said, it is the perfect small business profession. It really is the best. But, you know, a lot of the rules are being looked the other way or they're not being reinforced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's making a lot of things suffer. Cause I think we need to have some pushback by higher authorities to the insurance companies. We need to have some pushback with these conflicts of interest, textbook conflict of interest. We need some reinforcement there. I don't know who to go to or what.
I don't think it's going to happen, Brendan, because I think that there's so much benefit both ways when you start to get higher up the food chain that to really mount that kind of defense at the higher levels would require like sort of, you know, cutting the hand that feeds you a little.
Sure. Oh yeah. They're probably getting second salaries, you know?
Right. Or, you know, you don't know endorsements, screen time. I mean, who knows, right? Whatever it is, if there's going to be a change, I think it's a grassroots thing. It's not from the higher ups.
No, it's not. And I feel like there's a lot of distractions in dentistry too. We kind of touched on some of the distractions that we noticed. Because we're not allowing the small business nature. That's essentially the American dream, right? You mm-hmm. can hang a shingle, you could open up your practice and begin working, right? You put in the effort, you became a dentist, and that's just not possible anymore. And that's the American dream, right? Is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And everyone needs to have like an equal opportunity mm-hmm. to strive and open up that practice or have that job or get that degree. And now it's kind of putting the pressure into certain places where that's like, isn't it the heart and soul of the American dream? So yeah, I mean, just to kind of round out this topic a little bit, I'm concerned about that too. I don't think these things will change. I don't think the rules will get reinforced. And I don't think the people that can will call out the areas where it's textbook conflict of interest.
No,
and
I don't see
that. Students aren't going to benefit.
Not at all. And that's why, you know, I did for a long time sort of work and volunteer in that space, right? Through a lot of my volunteer leadership positions. And then when I realized exactly what I just communicated to you, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to work on educating as many people as I can because you have to make it work in this space because this is where where we are right now. So that's kind of why I do what I do. That's how that happened.
Do you consider that kind of like branching off or kind of hitting a fork in the road or?
You know, dentistry has given my family and I so much, and I constantly look for ways to pay my blessings forward. And when I realized that I was dumping my time and effort into something that wasn't giving me the result that I had hoped it would for, you know, a million different reasons, but all these things that we've just gotten done talking about, I was like, look, instead of getting frustrated and being negative, I'm going to spin my experience positive and then just use it to empower other people. Because I was, you know, no one wants to spend time just getting frustrated, right? What is the thing? Being busy and being productive are two different things. And I was being very busy and I was not being very productive. So now I am.
That's a great way to say it. And just for listeners, some of the things that in case I miss any, tell me about this platform, what you're doing right now, speaking, traveling around, mentoring, educating. Please, I want to get everything on the table. Where can people follow you, listen to you, learn from you?
Yeah. So I just came back from the Maryland Dental Association and I am headed to California tomorrow to do some programming with the California Dental Association. But if you follow me on my socials, I usually post kind of where I'm going to be. I am all over the place. Where have I been this year? Texas, Oregon, Alaska. I got to go to, which was beautiful, to the Alaska Dental Society. But I think that I'm really kind of all over and very accessible. I also write for Dental Economics in the AGD Impact magazine. So if you want to read some of the things that I write, you can find me there because a lot of that reflects the things that I do lecture about. But again, it comes from wanting to share my experience with the largest audience possible because this is what we have to work with right now. And until someone finds a better solution or until there's systemic change, we need to figure out how do we communicate value to patients that are going to be investing in their oral health in a way that makes sense, but also allows us to take the best care of our patients and the most patients as possible, right? Because we can't just spend 3 hours educating someone as much as we wish that we could. You know, how do you make dental benefits work for you? What do you do? I mean, we talked about the waiting periods. There's other things too, like timely filing limits. Hey, you start associating at a practice and they don't really have anyone filing up on denied claims and you're paid on collections. Well, if the office doesn't collect, you don't get paid, right? Because at some point, whether it's 60, 90 or 180 days after that claim is sent, you run up against this timely filing limit, which means that no matter what you send to the insurance company after that, they will never pay. So these are all the things, again, you know, and I'm just giving you little snippets, but these are the things I lecture about. These are the things that I talk about. These are the things that I write about in the hopes that more people talk about it. And honestly, that more people ask about it, because the best thing that you can do, whether you are a new dentist, a pre-dent, a seasoned dentist, is educate yourself, right? Be teachable constantly. There's so much out there to learn.
I saw on your story, it's gone now. I was trying to pull it up a second ago. That was the, was that a podcast that you did with some, who was it? Or was that a talk?
No. So my very best friend from dental school, who is division chief chair of pre-doc clinics at the University of California in San Francisco, who I met on my first day of orientation at NYU, and I are launching a podcast because we have so many of these conversations back and forth over the last 18 years. And she obviously interacts with students all day, and then I do what I do. So we said, maybe we should turn our conversations into snippets to help disseminate what we talk about to even more people.
Yes. So you are starting a podcast.
We are. Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. What's the name of it? Come on, let's go.
So it's called Project Confidence, but Confidence is spelled C-O-N-F-I-D-E-N-T-S, D-E-N-T-S. So Confidence, but Confidence.
Yeah.
So we're really, really excited. And I will share with you the Instagram handle and stuff, but we are going to be going live here. Yep. We're going to be recording and going live here probably over the next couple months. So I'm really excited, and you will see lots more about that. But that, again, Brendan, and I think this is one of the reasons that you and I connected. Sharing information and data is empowering and is never a bad thing. I would rather share my knowledge, and not just the positives, but also the lows, right? Not just the highs. So that there hopefully is a lesson in them for other people, with the hopes that they continue to do, you know, what you do, what I do, because we're not going to do this forever.
Right.
And so
giving back forever, yes, but doing,
right. Right. And so the more that we do it, in the more ways that we do it, the more we empower other people, hopefully that train continues, that chain, because while there are so many external forces, while there is so much going on in the world, there's still so much good. There is still so much good in this profession.
Chris, and thank you for making sure that we can all see that light. And you hit me up. This is 2 weeks ago. This is a couple weeks back. And we've been talking a lot since then. And I really appreciate our conversation that we got into. It helped me recognize that, you know, it isn't always just a dead end. And sometimes, you know, especially in dentistry and any career path, it can seem that way, you know, and we need to make sure that certain people have certain values, certain ideals that we could connect on. I really think you should start this podcast. You said how long it's going to take for you to start this thing? Why not, like,
we've got to get it all together. But I mean, we were hoping for a launch in the next couple of months, but we might go sooner.
Can you go sooner? And can you just let me know anything like what platform to use, what microphone should
I use? Riverside, actually.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. It's great. It gives you the transcript at the end. Compile the transcript. You could cut out all the ums, the ahs, the silences.
Perfect.
Take the transcript, plug it into ChatGPT, make your caption from that. It's up by midnight.
Yeah.
Do it.
I think that's what we're going
to
be doing.
You're busy. You don't have time. You need to do this stuff fast. It's about more content, right? It's not about like sitting around and looking the pretty. Like, no, you know what you're talking about, and you need to talk more about it.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, anything excited I could do to help you with that, please just reach out. I'd like to see you guys do it and make a move with it. Should we touch on one more topic or is this?
Go for it.
Yeah. So actually, even a patient came up to me today. I was like, yeah, so, you know, for, I could clip this at the end if you don't want to talk. It was funny. Where I was talking about it, took out a tooth, and I was like, and yeah, so just over the counter pain medications, you know, like ibuprofen, at all. If you forget any of the instructions, you could get the post-op instructions at the front desk. And she's like, oh, well, you know, all the Tylenol I took when I was a kid, I probably got autism. I wouldn't remember the instructions anyway. In light of everything that came up recently, we don't have to get into this. But what I wanted to ask you about is, regardless of what people believe or this and that, I saw a couple people posting in 2016, Tylenol posted on Twitter, By the way, we don't recommend any of our products for pregnant patients. You saw that. That's wild. That's all I wanted to get to here is regardless of what people think, it's like.
I saw that too, and I wasn't aware of that. And I saw that and I was like, huh. So did you know something that we all didn't know for the last 8 years? And why didn't we know it? Like, why wasn't that something that you didn't talk more about? And listen, not necessarily that they were saying that there's a link between, you know, the link that's been made now, but what is it that concerned you 8 years ago?
Exactly.
And why didn't you say it? Just say it. Like, if you're going to say that and drop that bomb, then why not just say, well, this is what we're concerned about? Or were they advised by legal that if they said it, then they would be taking on too much liability and opening themselves up to lawsuits, which doesn't really look good for them.
Right. They're insinuating this.
Yeah.
From 8 years ago, but not saying the thing. So wait, so we do need to be doing this research on the products and the, like, what chemicals are you putting in there? That's besides acetaminophen.
Yeah.
And so here's another thing. Pregnant patient comes in. Actually, I went yesterday with tooth extraction, right?
Okay.
Not going to use epinephrine. So we use carbocaine, take out the tooth and everything. What do you give a pregnant patient for pain? And we can't give ibuprofen. So if not Tylenol, now what do we do? So this is, I'm kind of alarmed because it's like, I'm like, well, I don't want to recommend something bad to a pregnant patient.
Right.
Here's some oxycodone. No.
Right. Oh, yeah. Just go for the strong stuff. Right. Because, you know, Tylenol was the recommendation because you can't give ibuprofen. So what are you giving?
Exactly. Why don't we have studies on this? Let's get some literature out. So I don't know. I just wanted to end with that because
I just want to know what they knew 8 years ago. That's all. Tell me what you knew.
That too. Where'd that come from? I was shocked. I saw the date. It was like,
yeah, it was 8 years ago.
7th, 2017. Yeah, it was something crazy. Yeah. Anyway. Hey, thanks so much for coming on a chat.
Yeah, of course.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Can I help you? Like, anything I get materials or stuff, I could send you stuff of, like, I don't know, the camera, the microphone, the ring light.
Yeah, send me what you use. That would be really helpful because we'll just buy doubles of it because she's obviously in California and I'm here. But yeah, I'm hoping to we would like to batch record things just because I travel so much. And so we'd like to batch record things and have it edited and then be able to release. Obviously, this is about the amount of content and then segue to stuff that's more live, having guests on. But we do not want it to be long. We want these to be digestible clips because of the specific audience that we're targeting.
Excellent. And I have ideas for that too, how you can make clips efficiently and effectively. I'll send you that information too. One other thought I had on our podcast today, have you ever written a book before?
I have not. And you know what? My aunt told me I should write a book. And I told her that seemed like it was a really big project that I couldn't handle. And I've been thinking about it for 9.5 months.
Well, just to kind of put this into perspective, say you put out a year of podcast. Do you think you're going to do once a month, once every 2 weeks or?
Probably biweekly is what we're hoping for.
Good. Yes. As many as possible.
Yeah.
Weekly, even better if you could get them down to 30-minute clips. You could compile all the transcripts of those podcasts, of you talking, all the ideas,
make
it into a book, ChatGPT or someone, an underwriter, what do they call it, a ghostwriter, help organize it into a digestible, engaging, interesting read. Because you're busy, right?
Yeah.
I want to see you.
It's a really good idea. And like I said, I've been thinking about it for a while, but now like you said, that podcast might make it easier.
It will. Hey, we'll see how it all goes. But have me on the pod. Let's chat. Anything I could help you out, contribute.
Definitely.
Let's talk again soon. And we should make this at minimum a yearly thing, maybe twice a year. This is part two, right?
Yep.
We're going to keep this going. We got to continue this.
Yeah. I think the more that we can check in and get some truths and knowledge out to the masses, the more helpful it'll be.
Yes. And I'm glad you're creating the podcast because I think long form content is number one.
Yep.
And the last couple of years have kind of proven that. You kind of get to know someone through long form content and you don't get to know someone through short form content.
Correct.
Right. So that's what you're going to do. You're going to take the clips and that's that little hint. That's that little that hook out there, but you got to watch the full version to really actually get to know them or understand the topic that was discussed.
Exactly.
And so, I'm excited.
Thank you. I'm excited too. It's going to be fun.
Good. So let me know how it goes. And thanks for taking the time today.
You are so welcome.
Hey, when you get back to New York, let's meet up. Let's grab a drink. Let's whatever.
Yeah, I want to meet your fiance, wife by then. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe wife by then, but 6 months, so you're going to come out here. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Patel. Thanks again. We'll chat soon. Just hang like 10 seconds. I'm going to hit end. Just wait 10 seconds.
Sure.
Otherwise, if it doesn't upload, then I'll have to text you later. You have to open up again.
Yeah, no worries.
Have a good night.
You too.